It was the dawn of the third age of podcasting, 12 years after the B5 premiere. The Babylon podcast was a dream given form, its goal to discuss Babylon 5 episodes, arcs, and implications, to interview the cast and crew about their experiences and memories. It's a home away from home for fanboys, geek girls, and lurkers. It can be a silly place, but it's our last best hope for B5 fans. This is the podcast about the story of the last of the Babylon stations. The year is 2006. The name of this show is the Babylon Podcast.
Welcome back to another Babylon Podcast. I am Summer Brooks.
I'm Tim Callender.
And I'm Darth Vader calling from North Hollywood. Nice.
Wait a minute. That's one of those crossover things.
Oh. Hey, you know what? You know what I'm convinced?
What?
I'm convinced that the Death Star would be no match whatsoever for a shadow battle crab.
Ooh.
You have such an ability to slide into deep geek so fast I could barely catch my breath.
Has anyone ever done a B5 versus Star Wars? Especially bad guys versus bad guys.
I don't know if anybody's done the mashup, but you know, here's the deal. Okay. This is what we know about the shadow vessels. They come in quick, right? They ripple in from hyperspace, do their damage, and they're gone. The only way to stop them is with telepaths to hold them in place so that you can start tearing them up. How many telepaths were there in Star Wars?
True, but it would take like 400 of those battle crabs to start cutting the star into pieces.
But then you've got the shadow planet killer.
Ah, okay.
Drops all those little things in and rips
Kim,
I'll race you. I'll take a pod racer and you can have the motorcycle.
Ooh.
No, that's no fair. I want the pod racer. You always get the pod racer.
Boys. Anyway, we do have a little bit of great news to lead the show off with.
Flash. Direct from Galaxy.
Wonder of wonders, we have an official Warner Brothers press release about Babylon 5, The Lost Tales.
Yay.
Who'd have thunk it? It's dated November 13th, and it actually is helpful, informative, and oh my goodness, it comes from Warner Brothers about Babylon 5. Here's a little teaser for you. Warner Home Video and Warner Brothers Television have announced the start of production of Babylon 5, The Lost Tales, a made-for-video movie that will be targeted towards the Babylon 5 loyal audience and science fiction fans in general. The announcement was jointly made by Jeff Brown, Senior Vice President and General Manager, Non-Theatrical Franchise, Warner Home Video, and Greg Medei, Senior Vice President, Movies and Miniseries, Warner Brothers TV. Are their titles really that long?
Oh yeah.
How do they fit on the business card?
They don't. It's a big deal.
just saying. Anyway, Warner Home Video will be the home entertainment distributor for this made-for-DVD release, which will include two new Babylon 5 stories, collectively entitled "Voices of the Dark," in one film, plus exclusive behind-the-scenes content. The stories will be written and directed by executive producer and original B5 creator J. Michael Straczynski. Executive producer Doug Netter also returns in that role. Actors from the original series that have signed on to participate in the project include Bruce Boxleitner, Tracy Scoggins, and Peter Woodward. Woohoo!
Hey,
and that's it?
Well, that's the important part.
Right.
That's the most important part.
If you read down a little farther, there is a statement in there that I'd love to get Jeffrey's reaction to, where it talks about Babylon 5 as, it's in there something like a top-rated science fiction
yes.
show.
The next paragraph begins, Babylon 5 is a top-selling franchise on DVD to date with over 44 million in consumer sales. Seems a little low to me, but Launched in February 1993, the award-winning series was a top-rated show on television with more than 13.7 million viewers in its debut season.
All right, Jeffrey, top-rated, how does that really define in terms of Babylon 5?
Wow. The truth is, I don't have an answer for you there. I don't know how I don't want to say that's a false claim, because that probably wouldn't be a true statement either, but what they're hanging that on is a little unclear for me at this point. That was the methodology of distribution for Babylon 5 in its first season was a highly complex and new platform.
You know what?
And the what?
I think I know where they're getting those numbers from.
Oh.
Because Babylon 5 had a consistent broadcast schedule and viewership level in the UK, and they always aired anywhere from 6 months to 8 months ahead of us in the UK.
Oh, that could be.
I wonder if that's where they're getting their numbers from.
That could be. Like I say, I don't know where that was hanging about.
On the other hand, would they really be likely to say, this science fiction show in its first year was extremely difficultly hard to find, and we never really quite had a grasp of who was watching it at any given moment. However, we're still making a product based on it, you know? I mean, that's...
Yeah. No, actually, the accurate statement, Tim, should be, because we totally screwed the fans the first 4 years, they're so rapidly hungry for our DVDs that we're selling a shitload of them, and so we're going to make some more.
There you go.
Yeah, right. That's not to say we don't love our friends at Warner Brothers who greenlighted this project, mm-hmm. and we're all eagerly anticipating.
Because they're paying for this, so we have to be a little bit thankful. Well, actually, a lot of it.
Absolutely. And kudos go to Greg Mayday, because he has been a champion of Babylon 5 since its inception, and it's almost not fair at all that press release doesn't tribute him in that same manner, because the relationship between Doug and Joe and Greg dates back to, you know, pre-Babylon 5 development. I mean, it goes way, way back. So
we should send him, like, fruit basket or chocolates
triad
for Christmas?
Yeah.
No? Okay. I'm just saying. Anyway.
I know. Sure. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. We'll figure something out there. Okay. What? We have surprises on tap for today's show. So we're going to take a quick break and come right back. Jump right into our surprise double feature. Let's call it that.
Grasshopper, you have learned much in your training. However, to achieve ultimate geekness, you must pass one final test. You must snatch this chip from my hand, Grasshopper. I wasn't looking. You must snatch this chip from my hand. Once again, you must snatch this chip from my hand. You must snatch this chip. Enough!
Learn to be a true master. Visit geekfuactiongrip.com.
All right, without any further ado, let's dial some numbers.
Curmudgeon?
Hey, it's Jeffrey.
Hey, Jeffrey.
Hi.
How are you?
Summer, we're great. We won at Tim and Summer. You guys remember Stephen Kirsch.
Yes,
he's been
I
on
do.
The Babylon
do.
Podcast before. So I invited Stephen back this afternoon because I needed to relieve my own personal guilt. Stephen invited me to a show. What are you doing, lady? Wait, I'm going to have an accident here. Stephen invited me to... a screening of his new film, and I was unable to attend, And so, as my mea culpa, I've invited Stephen to come tonight to tell us a little bit about the project.
Excellent.
Yes. Okay. Well, Stephen, is this the Project Basilisk that you mentioned when you were on the show the first time?
Yes.
And so what can you tell us about Basilisk?
Basilisk is 88 minutes of pure fun, and it's like a popcorn movie. It's kind of like Indiana Jones and Snakes on a Plane mixed together.
Excellent.
Who stars in the film?
Jeremy London and Yancey Butler from Switchblade or Witchblade.
Yeah, we saw the trailer that you aired at Dragon Con. That looked like it was a lot of fun to both watch and make.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, and it was great because I got to work with my son, who also stars in the movie, and my other son, who composed all the music for the movie.
Wow.
Wow.
Now, how was that to work with your sons and have to be the boss man as opposed to being the father?
Well, it was different than being the dad because they ruled me as the dad, and I got to rule them as the director.
So they finally had to listen to you.
Finally, you know. It's hard as a director to, you know, say, if you don't do the scene right, I'm going to ground you.
Time out for the composer.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Now, wait, I'm confused, though. Is this the one that is airing on Sci-Fi Channel?
Yes.
This is on Sci-Fi Channel on a great time slot. It's at 8 o'clock on Saturday, November 25th, the Saturday of the Thanksgiving holiday.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Now, aren't you worried about going up against football?
I don't know. Would football be on Saturday night, though? I don't know.
I don't think so. Maybe basketball, but...
I don't think sci-fi fans are going to be much into college football anyway.
That's true.
No, that's true.
I'm actually looking forward to seeing this because the trailer, usually I'm kind of hesitant about Sci-Fi Channel Saturday lineup, but the trailer had me laughing the entire time.
Yeah, it's different because it's going to be a lot of fun. And, you know, I know Sci-Fi Channel, I think, you know, I had a long conversation with the head of the Sci-Fi Channel, and they're looking to change their Saturday night in the near future so it's not so much of the same old stuff, you know, and better stuff and more psychological thrillers, kind of like Twilight Zone. They want to mix some of those in also.
Well, that's good.
So, Stephen, how did you get involved in the Basilisk project to begin with?
I was just a hired hand. I directed a couple of pictures for Sci-Fi Channel before, and they've done very well. Actually, I have the highest rated Sci-Fi Channel movie in their history of their network. So they keep coming back to me and asking me to direct more. So this is just one of the projects, and I read it. And it wasn't quite as funny as when I read it. And I know that I just could feel that I could take it to another level and make it more fun, kind of popcorn Saturday afternoon matinee type movie.
Very good. Are they getting behind it promotionally?
Oh, yeah. They just sent me actually today a whole list of radio stations to promote it on. And unfortunately, I have to get up at 4 in the morning or 5 time.
Right. Wow. So are we the first?
You're the very first interview. You got a scoop there.
Wow.
We call it a scoop in show business, a big scoop.
Now,
very
Stephen,
good.
How is it different being an actor as opposed to being a director? And how does having been an actor help or hinder your work as a director?
Well, it's a lot harder as a director. And the great thing about being an actor is I am able to talk to the actors, whereas, you know, a lot of people are directors and they know camera angles and stuff like that, but they just have a hard time conveying what they want if the actor's not giving them what they want. So I think I do have the advantage over that. And people, the other thing is, you know, people respect me because I am an actor and I had been a successful actor, so I'm not just some guy who was an editor who decided to direct trying to tell them how to act. They understand it's coming from a fellow actor.
The other thing that I've wondered, you know, I've seen, I don't think I saw it so much on Babylon 5, but a fair amount on Star Trek, where episodes would be directed by the actors. And it seems to me, not really knowing how you do it, how do you be an actor in front of the camera and be a director behind the camera simultaneously?
Well, it's difficult, and most of the time I try not to be in the episode or the movie, but, you know, I am in Basilisk, but in a very small part, you know. And sometimes it's just to save money so I can put the money back up on the screen, because I just don't charge them as an actor.
Well, that's all.
Right, but suppose you don't give yourself the kind of performance as an actor that you as a director are looking for. Do you take yourself aside and you know,
well,
have a schizophrenic conversation, or how does that work?
Well, the worst part is, you know, one time I was directing a film and I really did want the part in the movie, and I auditioned for myself and I didn't get the part. And I was pissed at myself the whole time.
So how?
No,
did,
but on Basilisk, you know, I would do this scene, and I would ask another actor, somebody I trust, you know, what did you think of that? And they would say, you know, I'd do it again. I just take another actor, just give me acting notes, you know, right. And then I would go and just watch the playback and see if I got the right camera angle.
Okay, so in making Basilisk, the script that you got funnier. And did you work with the writer, or did you actually just go in and just say, okay, this I can do a little bit differently, so I'm going to do it this way?
I did not work with the writer, because when I got the final script, I was in Europe, and they were in Los Angeles, and it was kind of very hard to contact each other, because we had a 10-hour difference. So I just rewrote it in myself.
Were there a fair amount of, are there special effects in the show? Did you do a lot of visual effects stuff?
Yeah, there's tons and tons of visual effects. And, you know, they try to make it, look like a big $80 million movie, which, of course, it doesn't look like an $80 million movie, but, you know, it looks like a, you know, $79 million movie.
So during shooting, was the Basilisk a tennis ball or a basketball?
No, the basilisk was just a broomstick with a piece of tape on the end of it. The basilisk had to be high, so they had to have a high eye line.
That's very funny. Now, you told me something the other night when we talked that I found a little bit interesting. You've come to a new level in your career where you're feeling a lot more relaxed about what you do these days. I don't want to say apathetic, but you don't feel the pressure that you used to feel.
No, I don't feel the pressure. I've turned to producing, and you know, it's like acting or directing. It's a crapshoot, you know. And I guess my age, I just realized that it's either going to happen or it's not. Me worrying about it or fretting about it is not going to change it. So why waste that time? I don't want to be on my desk saying, God, I wasted 20 years of my life, you know, if I, you know, add it up, you know, worrying unnecessarily, you know. So I just decided to go with the flow.
Do you think that attitude helped with making Basilisk a funnier picture?
Yeah, I mean, when I'm directing, it's a little bit different. I do care so much about the film, and I treat even these Sci-Fi Channel movies as if I was directing, you know, Schindler's List, you know, like an important movie. I don't skimp on there. I'm talking about getting work and you know, not regretting that somebody else got a job that I wanted. You know, I just move on and just enjoy life every day as much as I can, because, you know, besides growing older, is having dear friends like Andreas Katsoulis and Richard Biggs, who died at a very unusual early age, realized to me that, you know, our time on Earth is so short. And why, like I said, be on your deathbed or find out that you're going to die, and you say, God, I wasted so much time worrying. And that has changed my outlook on life a bit.
We also had a friend of yours on a couple weeks ago, Peter Jurasik, and he mentioned that he could have sat in a corner with you and giggled all day long.
Yeah, we We do laugh quite a bit when we see each other. We were at Dragon Con together, and it was very hard, you know, paying attention to the fans because we were just joking around too much, you know. But I really don't consider him a friend, though.
Are you comfortable talking about some of the other new projects you've got in development and coming together?
Sure, absolutely. I'd love to talk about me.
Excellent.
So that's what we're here for.
Just give us a list of all the projects and when we can find them, because I know our fans want to hear about them too.
Okay, well, I'm obviously Basilisk, which we're talking about, November 25th on the Sci-Fi Channel at 8 p.m. I am producing a movie for New Line Cinema called My Sister's Keeper, based on the best-selling novel of the same title, My Sister's Keeper, and I am producing two main event movies, not the low budget ones, thank God, for Lifetime Television, both from best-selling novels. One's called Keeping Faith, and the other one is called The Tenth Circle, both by the same author of Jodi Picoult. Big Jodi Picoult fan. She's a best-selling novelist, and she writes one book a year, and every time her books come out, they go right to the top of the New York bestsellers list. Hmm. And then the last thing I'm doing is I'm developing and producing a animated TV show for National Lampoon.
Oh.
Oh.
And it has a kind of outer space sci-fi connection. It's called National Lampoon's Alien House, and it's about a fraternity of aliens.
Oh, man.
And I have a lot of experience with that.
Yes, I imagine so.
I was both an alien and a frat guy in the movie.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's a real stretch for you, isn't it?
Yeah.
So in Alien House, how many eyes does Flounder have?
No, you know, they kind of look sort of human. They only have just, like, you know, very small physical differences, so because the humans won't be able to tell that they're aliens.
How can you do Alien House and not have one guy with tentacles?
Well, you know, we do have one guy that has multiple penises.
which you also have experience with.
Right, exactly. Yes, exactly.
There are no fresh ideas in Hollywood anymore.
Oh, wow.
And they are from their planet of not Centauri, but Zentauri.
Nice. Nice touch.
Long-lived parody.
And so when does Alien House come out?
Oh, I don't know. That's way in the development stages. I got this animation company very excited about it, and we are doing like a 3 to 4 minute pilot, and they're doing it for free. It's an award-winning animation studio out of New Hampshire called Hatchling Studios, and we're very excited that they wanted to be aboard on that.
Well, fantastic. Okay, so enough about me. One more thing about you. Give us that time and date again for the Sci-Fi Channel.
It is 8 o'clock Saturday night, November 25th.
Fantastic.
On the Sci-Fi Channel.
You are always welcome here at the Babylon Podcast, and whenever you want to talk about you, we want to hear it.
Okay, great. Okay, next time I'm going to sing the show song.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're all about that.
Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate your time.
This is Carrie Dobro, Doreen and Afeel from Crusade, inviting you to listen to BabylonPodcast.com.
It's always excellent to hear from Stephen. He is, he's one of my faves.
Yes.
He's awesome. And I hope this isn't a bad thing that we get a bunch of fan mail about, but I kind of like the idea of just giving him the opportunity to come on and blurb about his upcoming projects, and maybe we can kind of make that a little bit of a quasi-regular feature on the show.
We'll
have people come on.
Yeah, no, I have no problem with that at all, because I know a lot of fans out there would like to know what their favorite B5 peeps are up to. And I actually tried to get a screener copy of this from Sci-Fi Channel, but I don't think they got my message in time.
They go, you, Summer, you know that guy Willers? No way.
Hey, they sent me a screener of Savage Planet. Why not Basilisk?
Right, right. I also have another guest I'd like to bring on real quick, appropriate for the upcoming holidays. And so, Michael, if you're ready there, dial that number for us. Okay, so Pat Tallman, Vita Alexander, you wanted to talk to us a little bit about Be a Santa?
Yes, I run a charity program for the home, a home for abused children, called Penny Lane, and we make a holiday happen for these kids. I got 104 kids that I need to get gifts for, and I have about a quarter of the funds that I need to do that. So I'm hoping that some of the Babylon 5 fans will step up a little bit. I need some money, guys. Our website is beasanta.org. beasanta.org, and all the information's on there. We provide a gift card to the mall for the kids, for any store in the mall that they want to go to, plus a bag full of goodies. And we're going to provide a holiday party for each house. There's 8 houses and the main facility, so I need $100 for each house and $500 for the main. Plus, we're going to provide a Christmas tree and decorations, so I need funds for that. I think I might be able to get the trees donated, but I definitely need money for lights and decorations. So that's the plea there.
You've been doing it for a lot of years, though, and the Sci-Fi fans have always been incredibly supportive. Tell us
Absolutely.
A little bit about what you've accomplished with the Sci-Fi fans' contributions.
Well, the thing is that the fans have just always been incredibly generous. I think a lot of people really understand where these kids are coming from. They don't fit in. They've had it rough. You know, they don't function in society in a normal way, so they have to be in a special place, and it's really tough. It's really tough for them, and the fans have always been completely compassionate. And we raised money to build them a computer lab, which is fantastic and has been greatly appreciated. They've been really appreciative and lovely about it, and they didn't have a holiday program. They sort of just got in donations from wherever, like basketballs for the boys and Barbie dolls for the girls, but sometimes one of the girls would want a basketball, one of the boys would want a Barbie doll, and, you know, they just weren't getting what they wanted. Plus, it was very sparse. It wasn't very much, and that was it. Oh, that's all they got. So I thought, well, I can help them do better than that, you know. And originally, we put up wish lists and went shopping for each kid, and I just realized, first of all, it was overwhelming, and sometimes I felt like the kids didn't know what they were asking for. And the reality is, teenagers love to go shopping. So now they get a gift card to the mall. They can go to any store they want.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay. We have another receiving device going off.
So how did you get involved with Be a Santa?
I created Be a Santa.
Oh, you created it? How long ago?
Yeah, 6 years ago.
Wow, that's awesome.
The computer lab something to be marveled at, because it is not just a little room with a couple of old desktops in it. It's a very nice facility with many computers in it, and the kids have received tremendous training and have really opened up the opportunities for their future, because they can function like real people now because they've picked up these skills. So it's kudos to you, Pat, for making that whole thing happen. It really
is something very, very impressive.
And the fans made it happen. Absolutely, the fans made it happen.
And hopefully we can get a lot more fans to help you make this year just as good, if not better.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a small program, and I don't, you know, total, I can make this work on $10,000-$12,000, which, when you consider the size of other programs, this is nothing. It's a drop in the bucket. It's really a very personal program, because I also ask, it's all on the website, but I do ask everybody to sign a card with it, and don't address it, we'll address it for you. Make sure each kid gets a card, a Christmas card. I can't tell you how much just that means to them. It's really sweet. They love that. And we try to find out what their likes and dislikes are. So we do make the bag, the shopping bag that they get, with something in it that they really like, SpongeBob, or, you know, so that it has things in it that the girls or boys are really interested in. That's what I was trying to do, is make it something that they would like and that addressed their individual interests.
Pat, how do fans send donations to Be a Santa?
Well, it's all on the website, beasanta.org. They can just, there's an address there. They can send a check made out to Penny Lane. There is a way to use a credit card on the Penny Lane site, but if you do that, you have to send me an email saying that you've done that, because I can't claim the funds unless I know that they're there. So I think if you go to the beasanta.org website, there it explains how to do all of that and how to email us and all of that. So I hope that it's pretty clear. And we put up new information on there all the time, like the kids will send in notes, and we put up that stuff so that it just helps people to connect to the kids. All right. Thank you so much, you guys. Thanks for your help.
You're very, very welcome.
Get your geek on in a Geek Label t-shirt. Shirts for gamers, geeks, and tech heads. If you like games, movies, computers, or comics, we've got your new t-shirt waiting for you. Let Geek Label change your life. You can go from,
oh, hell no,
to,
oh, hell yeah,
in the blink of a t-shirt. And the best part, every design is available in all kinds of silky, smooth colors and shirt styles. Short and long sleeve tees, and for the ladies, ooh, ringers, raglans, ladies tees, even spaghetti strap tees. Feel fly, walk tall, be irresistible to the opposite sex. Died, even we can't do all that. Hundreds of designs, and they're all off the hook, yo. You pick the style, you pick the color, we do the rest, because that's how we roll. Get your geek on at Geek Label. That's one word, geeklabel.com.
All right. In order to make sure that everyone has all of the relevant info about Pat Tallman's charity, Be a Santa, that website is beasanta.org, and the group that they're helping out, the Children of Penny Lane, you can find out more about that at pennylane.org. And Penny Lane's mission is to foster hopes and dreams by empowering children, youth, and families to reach their highest potential. And Pat's charity helps that. Did I get all that right, Jeff?
No, you've done excellent.
Excellent.
And it truly is. I'm honored to have been part of this and supported Patty each year on this project and be part of various Penny Lane functions, and I can assure you that this is one of those organizations where the money, like, really gets to where it's going and really does the right job. And so much of what Patty has raised with Be a Santa has come from the sci-fi fans, who I have always found to be just fabulous at their conscientious charities at conventions and things like that. I mean, the sci-fi fans they just rock.
Yes. And there's plenty of information on the beasanta.org website where you can submit, you can send a check directly to Pat that'll go towards helping out the Penny Lane people. You can also, she said you can donate by credit card, but you have to email her and let you know you sent that in. Little technical glitch there, but that's okay. The money still will get to where it's needed. There's a list here of things that they need. They need holiday cards, stuffed animals, young adult and teen books, teen
hey, you
series,
know what? It's,
everything.
This happens every now and then. I'm a little too busy on my business day, so I think my phone's about to crap out on me. So just in advance, I'll say thank you. But if you guys lose me, then you just have to say Yoda. And Tim will do 15, 20 minutes, fill out the rest of the show. I'm sure it won't be a big problem.
Will do. But yeah, there's a list of items that that Pat can use, Be a Santa can use for the Penny Lane kids. like I said, cards, stuffed animals, books, cash donations, so they can actually put together services at the home for the for the children. And let's try to make this a really, really special holiday season for these kids. Let's like really, really help Pat put together something special.
Yeah, I'm sure everybody will do a little something to kick in. And, you know, and I think what's important to remember is that it's too big a project for any one person to do a lot of, but if a lot of people kick in just a little bit, then all of a sudden you've got a big amount. Oh, there you go.
Cool. So if I say Yoda, what will Tim do?
Looking for someone. Found someone you have, I would say. Here's...
We're going to do the movie?
No.
Judge me by my size, do you? As well, you should not.
Size matters not.
Oh,
at least I've heard that before.
But she said last night.
Oh, that's just wrong. Sock puppet sex. Ow.
Wow. Oh, there's a... Okay. What is the, isn't this the B5 podcast?
Yes. No more Yoda.
Yes, it was. Okay.
You could actually go around singing Molare.
Molare. I can't do it as well as Stephen.
That was good, though.
Well, actually, you know what you should do? Mm. I'll tell you what we should do. We should actually introduce our in-studio audience that came in because they were so excited about this whole Babylon 5 thing. That
wow.
They had to come in live and see it.
All right, let's go around the room, Mike.
Okay. First up, we have my roommate, Robin, who, if anyone else who listens to any of the Farpoint Media shows, might recognize her as the one on the bumper going, Spherical told me it's Jack Mangan. Say hi, Robin.
Hello.
And on
hi,
the
Robin.
Other side of the room, we have my friend, Brian.
Hello.
Brian is a geek, more gamer lately than bookworm, but we've given him enough book supplies to last him.
Yeah, I think so.
A month.
I like to read.
he's going to fit in just fine.
He's going to be helping us out over at Dragon Page, and probably a lot more stuff if I have my way, but that's all.
Oh, God, no.
But I found it fairly interesting that this thing has grown enough now. We don't have just a live feed of listeners out there listening at wee hours of the morning across the pond and around the country, but we've actually got live human beings coming into the studio.
I was going to say that
podcast
was
recorded before a live studio audience.
You know what? We're going to need that really soon.
Pretty soon. I just thought today was just like a coincidence of scheduling. It shows you what I know.
A coinky dink.
Nah, but we have fun. It's a great show, and if it can introduce people who had never seen the show before to at least get them interested in wanting to see the show, because of everybody here was literally laughing hysterically at stuff you won't hear in the show. But you will hear later.
Yeah. You folks listening to the show without experiencing the live feed, just have no clue what the heck you missed.
But you haven't missed it entirely. You will be hearing it later because that was just too... That was too good.
not to
use at some point in time. But
that's right.
Like I said, but both Robin and Brian are B5 virgins.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, this is about a show? Oh. Sorry.
Not just any show.
Yes.
No, that is what this podcast is all about, is introducing people that do not know what B5 is. And introducing them to B5.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can convert one or two people a day, hey, that's a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of people a year.
It's a lot of people who go out and would get the, well, only season one's available on iTunes, but they go out and the DVDs are readily available.
Right.
The DVDs are probably, people are going to go, hey, what's this B5 thing? Because we have new B5 coming out. So you've got a whole lot of people who are more aware of this news story and go, hey, I might have to go check out the old stuff because I have no idea who these people are in this new thing.
That's right. That's.
I'd also like to know how many people might have found the show who were first introduced to J. Michael Straczynski via his comics writing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in doing some research, found out, oh, he also did this thing called Babylon 5. What's that? I'd be curious to know how much of a crossover there is that way.
I think a lot of it does circle back in because I remember when B5 first came in, he had already written that book, The Complete Book of Script Writing. That was out before B5 came out. But when the first Hugo awards came around, that book came back into print, and I was actually able to find a copy. Go figure.
Yeah, right.
And they included a script of Coming of Shadows in the book, which I thought was cool.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's a good one to have mm-hmm. in there.
And that's where I'm more familiar with him is his comic book writing. You know, his power, his all the different series he's done, you know.
Rising Stars,
specifically.
Was it Midnight Nation?
Midnight Nation was an excellent series he did as well, you bet.
I actually made a rare visit to a comic store a few months ago, I guess, and might even longer than that. I happened to pick up a Fantastic Four issue that he had scripted, mm-hmm. and in it describes Reed Richards going beyond space and time and back to the original entity that created the universe, and comments about, you know, seeing the birth of the universe, and there go flying the gamma rays that affected all the Fantastic Four. You know, Ben, such a solid, dependable guy, and Johnny, who is a real hothead, and Sue, a real quiet, retiring type. And then at that moment, he realizes that his thoughts are influencing the gamma rays that millions of years hence will interact with their bodies and give them those specific powers. And, you know, in a metaphorical way, Reed Richards was responsible for the kinds of superheroes they had become. It was really, I mean, it sounds, you know, kind of dopey to hear me describe it, but you sitting there in the store reading the thing, it was just all of a sudden this amazing, you know, just another example of why the man is a genius. I mean, he completely out of the blue puts a whole new spin on some of the most popular characters in comic book history. And so,
maybe he can write part two and make it work.
Well, I don't know about the movie.
No,
so,
the second movie's really already done. But yeah, no, that's interesting. You know, thoughts into action and what he thought put into action the energy that gave them their powers so many years later. That's kind of neat.
Right. No, I think the most important thing in this is that he was standing in the comic book shop reading it instead of buying it and taking it home.
I don't usually have a lot of pocket change in my
any wallet. Idea how many comic books you have to catch up on for the storyline these days?
Yeah, I know, right? That was the other part of it. It was like, you know.
That's why they make trade paperbacks.
Yes.
Yeah. That's it.
They make them now.
Yes, that's true. Very true.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, well, we'll have to get Brian watching Babylon 5 so he can experience that joy. You know, and I was thinking about this, specifically regarding last week's recording, or 2 weeks ago, I guess, Mike, when it was just the all guys night. In a sense, you know, I kind of envy you and Brian and Robin and whoever else might be finding the show for the first time, because there's only once where it's all fresh and new and amazing. And don't get me wrong, I mean, one of the strengths of the series is that you can go back and watch it over and over again like Summer and I have and take it apart, but to watch it unfold for the first time is really a magic thing, and I'm really pleased for you guys, because it's just going to be a neat thing.
And to do it all in one sitting with
no season breaks
and no commercials.
Right.
That's the only way to
know
do it.
You don't know you'll miss out on the tension of waiting for what happens after the fall of night or
no, Summer has the discs and she's hoarding them until she's ready to give them up. So
and since
I have a little of that. I'm ready for season two.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. Well, and I'm actually helping to facilitate him, because since we're taking actually a little short recording break, I can lend him my season two DVDs without interrupting me rewatching them right. for when we talk about the episode. So he there will have go. Been caught up.
I have the IV drip and the catheter ready to go.
All right, there you go. So
now, are you powering yourself with caffeine or beer?
Caffeinated beer.
You can't start out in the morning with the beer, because you'll lose a whole lot of subplots and threads if you're too drunk to pay attention to the last half of the
second
season.
That's true. That's true. Okay, I'll intersperse it with Red Bull and I'll be fine.
There you go. Yeah.
Okay.
That,
will that do it for today, gents?
I think so, since Jeffrey's bailed on us.
Jeffrey didn't bail on us. Jeffrey's battered her. Battery.
Crap. Battered her.
Batter up. I was going baseball.
You know
I
what?
No idea.
For the folks out there that are listening to this show and thinking, gee, what's up with them? They've only been at this for 45 minutes. No, we've been at this for hours.
Yeah,
so.
And this is only the tip of the iceberg for the insanity that we've gone through.
Yeah, that's why you need to enjoy the live feed.
Yeah.
If you're not on the live feed, how do they find that, Summer?
The live feed can be found at one of two sites. We have a U.S. site, which is cultofsummer.com. We have, cultofsummer.com/8000. We have a feed in Australia, which is stream.froosh.net, spelled F-R-O-O-S-H. And rumor has it we're going to be getting a European one.
Really?
I don't know if it's from Warlord or Yarstow or someone there wants to set up a European feed.
Probably Yarstow, since he's become the producer of the show already.
He's become the podcast dude. So.
Of the European division of the Babylon podcast.
The European division.
That's right.
We have two feeds that you can listen to live streaming. We have a chat room. Mm-hmm. Where you can join in and comment about what we stumble over and just
right.
crack up laughing at. That chat room is an IRC chat room. You can go to irc.freenode.net. The command is, the channel is #BabylonPodcast. You can get to it from Chatzilla or IRC or XChat or whatever your favorite mm-hmm. chat client is. And if you want to talk directly to us, you can send an email to babylonpodcast@gmail.com or call in to talk to us with a voicemail. That number is 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
Hear the great train wreck smashed against us all.
Yes. Well, I don't know what else to say. I've stumbled enough for tonight, so
we're done.
We will see you next time on the other side of the gate.